The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hello there, my name's Neil David, and I'm the host of Eurograps Express, the podcast exclusively dedicated to the wrestling of Europe. If it's wrestling and it happens in Europe and it's good, we talk about it. Whether it's RevPro, Progress, WXW, Passion Pro, Pro Wrestling Chaos, Pro Wrestling North, we don't care, we talk about them all. If it's good and it's exciting, I want to share it with you. We're on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Check us out on the feed. Check us out on Twitter at EurograpsEXP. And join us for chat about European wrestling and a little bit of chat about cheese. Hopefully see you there.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hey kids, do you like professional wrestling? We're going to test ourselves this week. We kind of like professional wrestling too. This is Shake Them Ropes. I am Jeff Hawkins. He is Chris Novembrino. This is President's Day weekend. Chris, who's your favorite president?
My favorite president, if we are talking in just in terms of facial hair, no particular reason why I might start there. It's obviously Chester A. Arthur. The man just had the best mutton chops mustache combo of any president, in my opinion. Many presidents didn't even try after Chet Arthur perfected the art form.
There was that run of presidents in like the late 19th century who were all like facial hair aficionados. You know, you had Benjamin Harrison and Grover Cleveland and Taft.
And then at some point, American politics decided that clean shaven was the way to go. You know, yes. You have Coolidge and Herbert Hoover, FDR. Not a mustache to be found on any of these men.
Who's the last person to have facial hair, now that I think about it?
Probably Taft. Because Wilson and Coolidge work a bipartisan conspiracy against mustaches.
Well, Wilson probably had some other ideas of what facial hair meant. It's probably something for the plebes or something like that.
And Coolidge would also have been kind of like, maybe facial hair is, you know, is plebeian. He's a little more waspy, patrician-y. Like, this is the thing to think about when it comes to presidents. Where are the mustaches? Yeah, it is. Okay. Like, a lot of people, here's the thing. A lot of people aren't excited about this upcoming election, right? But I want you to just consider the two candidates real quickly. However you feel about them, imagine they had mustaches all of a sudden. Right, yeah, right. I know.
No. You know,
they're both more fun. I imagine if they have whimsical mustaches.
One would have a giant handlebar.
Yeah.
The other wouldn't know how the other one grew.
Maybe a comb over on one of these mustaches. There's any number of exciting options to spice up this election with facial hair.
I'll say this.
Now to answer your original question here, who is probably my favorite president of all of the presidents? I gotta tell you, and I know you're gonna rag me for this, I got a real soft spot for Jimmy Carter. I think like he's just a good dude. Of all of the presidents in terms of biography and stuff who actually speak to like a decent human being, even though he was a mid ass president, like Carter, I think it's going to be sad when he finally goes, because he did so much as like a humanitarian and that sort of thing in a way that other presidents kind of like to grandstand on. They'll do a charity or whatever. They'll have their foundation. Carter was out there building houses. I think that's cool.
I'll let you have him without comment. I think Oh, God, I've really taken a shine after reading Amity Schley's biography of Calvin Coolidge. That dude, that guy was skinflint all the way. Like, how much is this going to cost? No. Until he got in the latter stage, a little bit of corruption there, but everybody ends in corruption, it turns out. Grant also secretly underrated as a president, by the way.
And you know who I find interesting and compelling is Nixon. He's like not my favorite, but I find his politics to be so weirdly complicated and idiosyncratic. And
yes.
The more you study him, yeah, yeah, right. Right. No, he's complicated and idiosyncratic. I'm not saying he's like a source of admiration, but like in terms of all of the presidents of maybe the last 50, 60 years, he's the one who I think thought the most about what the nature of the job is. It'd be like maybe Nixon and then Clinton would be right underneath him and then like Reagan. Others just sort of like kind of came into role, Carter included. And Ford, similar thing, not really having much of a vision of what it was. Nixon clearly had like thoughts, and that makes it makes kind of parsing through them kind of interesting.
That'll do it for History Talk. We'll see you next week on NPR. Leading off this week, why not? Rocky Romero and QT Marshall are now in the office for AEW. Rocky coming for the first time, QT Marshall returning. Both will be working in coaching and developing new talent. Romero is also involved with international business partnerships, notably New Japan, where he also has a position. It's kind of odd. And CMLL. Marshall's main job will be talent development and training wrestlers. QT, as noted, quit due to a difference in philosophy, but he really wanted to be a wrestler. And there's a part of me that feels really bad for him. Really does, because he went out there, goes, you know what? I'm going to bet on myself. Think I've gotten in pretty good shape, pretty good wrestler, done all this stuff, and nobody would book him. He did like an angle in AAA and a couple of indies, and nobody wanted him. And so now he's back, and he's not going to be on camera. He's going to be behind the scenes teaching. And boy, that speaks to me in a way in terms of certain career choices I have had to make when I wanted to perform, and they go, no, we'd like you to be a teacher still. It's like, but I want to perform. It's like, no, you can teach here.
Yeah, we don't see you as that guy.
Yeah.
That hurts, man, especially when you've put the work in. Like, you know, so like this story also really speaks to me. I think speaks to like every dude past a certain age where it's like you have that moment at some point in your life where you have that you're not that guy moment. And oh, those hurt. Yeah. Those hurt. So especially when you've been putting in, when you've been doing the work and you find out even after all the work, like you actually tried this time and you're not that guy. That sucks. I feel bad for him.
Yeah, no, that kind of came to me in stand-up around, oh, I'd say 2006, 2007, where it's like you see this new generation coming up and like almost nobody from like my exact age, there are people like ahead of me and I guess Dave Chappelle, but Dave Chappelle started before I did even, and I started at 17. But you see the new class coming up and you're like, well, that's kind of going to be kind of it, isn't it? Kind of a thing. It's like, can't get booked as much, struggling to get as many spots on stage, new people coming back from the East Coast and keeps flooding in and flooding in. And you're just like, well, I gave it a shot and you just didn't get the moment. But then you'll hear like people who succeed always go, well, you know, talent and perseverance always win out. It's like, no, that's not always true.
Man, I hate that success. I hate the successy crap.
You know who says that? Successful people. That's the only
right. Thing. Right. But you know why they say it, Jeff? Because they don't want to acknowledge that luck
has
a
lot to do with
effing
it. Yes.
Factor.
Yes.
And you can't control it. And you can't control. All you can do is set yourself in the best possible position to catch the luck. Yeah, yeah. But like, I mean, this is a thing that drives me crazy a lot of times when people talk about, oh, this, that, or the other. Luck is such a huge factor in so many aspects of life. And some people just aren't lucky, and it doesn't mean that they were failures. Like they
some were born like too early or too late to really capitalize on their talents too. You know, I mean, there are people who would have. I mean, like it was weird because I thought like I have a sort of cynical, snarky, sarcastic demeanor. I thought that, you know, I thought my time had come because all the snarky white guys were getting TV shows and stuff like that, and then it just turned out. It became an overabundance of snark to the point where we flooded the market with it. And it was no longer cool to be snarky and disaffected and ironic and all those other things.
Right.
I liked QT's. I mean, look, I didn't like QTV, which to me was very much a WWE type of construct for a gimmick type of thing. But to me, he has certain, for lack of a better term, Southern wrestling bona fides that I kind of always dug in terms of his storytelling and things that he wanted to do and how he built a feud and things like that. He also, unfortunately, he got Wally Pipped. He went on vacation. He was basically TK's guy with formats for TV and things like that. Went on vacation and then they go, we can do the job without him. He came back and kind of lost that kind of position there. So, I mean, it's a complicated business, show business at all is, but you know what? Tony Khan said that he was always welcome back after he left to pursue a career, and he was a man of his word, so good on Tony Khan for that one.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I actually think QT Marshall would be perfect as, like, the Young Bucks' Kevin Dunn figure right now.
Don't encourage that. Oh, my God, no. Although I think that's going to be Cutler.
Yeah, that'll probably be Cutler, but yeah, like
because he's currently doing that on Elon Musk's X app, where he's talking about where he's basically saying sources say and you know and kind of being like a PR guy. But yeah, if you want to expound on that, you can.
No, I mean I think that's basically like, I mean like the, you know that's maybe even just cut to him in the back changing camera angles and stuff. Like he doesn't even have to be a major role. Like yeah, it could be useful though. Anyways, what else we got? What else we got?
Latest story regarding Vince McMahon this past week came from a sworn affidavit by Ashley Massaro, the late Ashley Massaro, that had never been released publicly by lawyers Constantine Kairos and Erica Mirabella, who worked together on the concussion lawsuit that failed. In that lawsuit, Kairos was ordered to pay $300,000 in fines for being sanctioned for his conduct in the case. It had more allegations against McMahon personally in a story in Vice by Tim Marchman. Kairos said he never released it because it had nothing to do with the concussion lawsuit, although years ago he did release the rape allegation story Massaro told regarding an apparent doctor at a military base while on a WWE military tour, which also didn't relate to the concussion lawsuit. Should also be noted that Massaro, after she had given this deposition, apologized to WWE, Vince McMahon, Stephanie McMahon, and Kevin Dunn, and blamed Kairos for the thing she said in a later letter to WWE. But it gets more interesting after the affidavit was released, and I'll get to some of the points in that afterwards. Her best friend was on Ashley Banfield's show on News Nation and said that everything in the deposition was the same thing Massaro told her at the time. Basically, what happened was they went on a tour of Kuwait. She had a soma addiction, and she got drugged and was raped and sodomized multiple times in a drugged up state, attempting to stay awake. She also said that Massaro told her that a WWE executive who she didn't name actually took her from the room in a blanket to her hotel, so the company knew about it almost immediately. She also said the rest of the crew went home, but Massaro, due to her medical condition from essentially being almost paralyzed because of being drugged, had to stay by herself in Kuwait after everyone went home. She said Massaro told her she had spoken to Vince McMahon several times about the incident, corroborated the boardroom meeting where she was told not to report it, which WWE has always vehemently denied. She brought up that Vince had Stephanie talk to her as a woman to be sympathetic. And Pippi also corroborated that Massaro told Dr. Ferdinand Rios, who has said since that he was told by Massaro about what happened, but that Massaro asked him to be quiet about it. Now, I was around during this time when this happened, and I remember the media statement was like, you know, Jerry McDevitt said that everyone on that tour but Maria Kanellis had told WWE they knew nothing about it, and he described not knowing why when WWE asked that Kanellis refused to say anything. And this is the release. At no time was Vince McMahon or the management of WWE ever informed by Ashley Massaro or anybody else that she had been sexually assaulted, drugged, raped, or sodomized by a military doctor with a nurse standing guard while on the Goodwill tour in 2007 to U.S. military bases in Kuwait. In fact, if she ever articulated such a claim to WWE, we would have reported it immediately to the base commander. At no time was there ever a meeting with Vince McMahon, Kevin Dunn, John Laurinaitis, or other company executives in which she told them of such a claim and was instructed to keep it quiet. Pippia, the friend, confirmed Massaro told her the story in 2006 when it happened, saying they told her the story had to stay under wraps. I'll let that digest for a second for you there, Chris. One thing in the affidavit that I know from creative stand, here's also a quote. During my time with the WWE, I had observed Vince McMahon making out with other divas in the locker room, but he never paid attention to me, and I assumed I was not his type. This changed after my Playboy cover was released. I was fortunate enough to be allowed to fly on the company jet and stay at the same hotels as the executives for a period of time so that I could get home faster to spend more time with my daughter. On one of these occasions, Vince was attempting to get me alone with him in his hotel room late at night, and I felt extraordinarily uncomfortable. He began calling the hotel room phone and my cell phone nonstop. I called Kevin Dunn to explain the situation, and he said I should tell Vince I was not feeling well and would see him on TV the next day. So I did. Immediately after that night, Vince started writing my promos for me. Vince does not write promos for female wrestlers. That is the job of the creative department, and he certainly wouldn't have, under any normal circumstances, written a promo for me. But he did, and the promos were written with the clear intention of ruining my career. I brought the first script Vince wrote for me to the WWE in charge of creative at the time, Michael Hayes, and he said, quote, "You're not saying this. Who the bleep wrote this?" And I told him that Vince did. He said, "Well, kid, these are the breaks." Meaning that Vince wanted to end my career and destroy my reputation on my way out. He is known for this type of behavior and also did this too, redacted, upon her departure from WWE. In addition, after that night, each time I walked by him, he would make vulgar sexual comments that were clearly designed to make me uncomfortable.
I mean, it that comment earlier about them going, well, Ashley Massaro never came to Vince and talked about the sexual assault. Could you imagine in any context going to Vince and talking about a sexual assault and thinking that that would be the sensitive ears receptive to the situation who's going to take the matter really seriously? With everything that we now know about Vincent Kennedy McMahon circa 15, 20 years ago, and I mean, like, we've known this down the line too, but like that vintage of McMahon, 2000 to 2010, he was a monster. You can't blame her for not going to McMahon. And him going scorched earth on the promos and everything is very consistent with everything else that we've heard, and very consistent with the running narrative with McMahon that he has a control fetish, that beyond the sex, it's about the control, it's about the humiliation, it's about debasing people and, you know, showing that he's up here and that they're down there and that they thought they were coming up and that he had the ability to pull them up. And he has the ability to push you back down. I mean, even the stuff about you get to stay in the corporate suites, he likes doing that because he likes cutting it off. It's not like he likes doing it because he likes doing a nice thing for people. He likes doing a nice thing for people to take away the nice thing.
Well, here's the line that I left out of the Observer story, unfortunately. And this is going to be the big one here, I think. While Laurinaitis denied a cover-up, his lawyer did say Laurinaitis knew about it, and Dr. Rio said he spoke with Laurinaitis about it, and Laurinaitis said he was already aware. Laurinaitis' lawyer said that most upper-level management knew, which means if the Stephanie part of the story is true, if the Laurinaitis, whatever he's going to give attorneys, is true, I don't see how any of the McMahon family are not gone from this company in terms of, and I think Triple H is probably going to get implicated here somewhere. with something.
He's playing with fire. Yeah, I know. I'm the same. Him getting back on TV
and playing and trying Uncle Paul from NXT. Remember me?
You know, it smacks of when Vince tried to do this with Titus O'Neil and the other like the, you know, welcome to the 2163rd episode of Raw. What that weird
thank
episode?
Thank you, Vince chant that Stephanie put out there when the original allegation. Yeah, I'm gonna be very careful here because there was issues at one of my former employers of somewhat of a similar nature, and this was involving people far more powerful than me who were the victims. And they went to human resources and were pretty much blown off. And then we're given
human resources worked for the company.
Yes.
I mean, one of the fundamental problems with the human resources structure is that they are not ombudsmen that stand outside of the company and observe the going ons inside of the company. That would have its own set of problems, but they are instead in-house, which comes with its set of problems that we, all of us who have worked in a dynamic where you have a human resources department, are acutely aware of, which is that human resources has one set of rules for everybody underneath human resources. And then for everybody above human resources, they have a set of explanations.
Yes, there's an internal directive and an external directive. External directive, yes. Hey, we're here for you, the employees. Come to us with problems, blah, blah, blah. Internal directive, protect the money.
Yep.
This thing is going to, it's funny to me because there's so much talk on the app you're not on anymore about how we need to keep this in the news and keep talking about. But you can't talk about anything new until it gets to court. Although we keep getting these types of stories all the time. It's like, well, I guess we do have a lot we can keep talking about and keep hammering it and stuff like that. So it's one of those things where I don't have an agenda against WWE by keeping it in the news, but it's there and you got to talk about it when it's there. That's
yeah. Certainly I'm not.
There are some people who are agenda driven.
Yeah, Jeff will vouch for me. I am not spending hours of my week digging up new WWE stories to bring down Vince McMahon. That is not the level of preparation I am bringing to this show. I just think as these stories continue to manifest, and those of us who have done any amount of like historical back stuff, or if you've just been watching wrestling for 20 years, you know a certain thing about McMahon because he put so much of his pathologies on TV. And as these stories come out, you go, does this wash with the Vince that I know? Yeah, it does. All this stuff does. And my last thought is I will just never, ever, ever take as a valid argument, well, why didn't you go to human resources? If we could retire that argument in 2024, I would be so thrilled about that because it's so naive. All it does is make the person making that argument seem like they've never actually worked a job in their life.
Although the reason I added that last anecdote is I just love the absolute 180 by an absolute spineless shill like Hayes. I was like, who wrote this? This is the biggest piece of crap out Vince wrote. Well, sorry about that, kid.
You know.
Guess you're done.
Guess you're toast, dude.
It so reminds me of the one time I've met him. We won't go into that, though. Observer reporting that Tommy Dreamer is now the TNA head of creative, as many expected with Scott D'Amore gone. But old Fightful Select and our boy Sean Ross have goes, nah, that's not true. We're told that creative is in TNA is now unchanged and features R.D. Evans, my favorite people, Hunter Johnson, Delirious. Robert Evans, not Delirious necessarily, and Tommy Dreamer, and they will be supported by Gail Kim and Jorge Barboza. Ariel Schnerer is overseeing all of the content and will be working closely with new TNA president Anthony Ciccioni on all talent / creative decisions. Yeah, I don't want Tommy Dreamer in charge of my creative. He has like two ideas.
He has like two ideas. Yeah, no, he's not.
A committee I'll take. Like, Artie Evans is one of the most creative dudes in wrestling. Always has been, always will be.
But, like, no, like, Tommy Dreamer's, I mean, if you gave him, like, the entire book and told him to make shows, they'd be boring as hell. Like, 6 months of Tommy Dreamer's shows would put you to sleep. I mean, because you just... He just keep bringing it back to a hardcore match, right? Like, you'd be like, feud culminates in a hardcore match. He's not going to give you, like, great title programs or a good, interesting faction, you know, like the week-to-week intrigue stuff.
We have an interesting problem in wrestling, and we knew it was coming down the pike, but it's now here, in that, with the exception possibly of Heyman and Levesque, because I don't think Arn Anderson is backstage at AEW all that much anymore. We haven't had guys who have been in the creative room when wrestling was hot. You know how they say at the top of the mountain? We have a lot of guys who have been at the base of the mountain. In terms of creative, you know, angles and things like that. We haven't had one that, you know, has really caught fire. Other than maybe, you know, this Bloodline story, but it hasn't really experienced a wrestling boom of sorts. So now we have a bunch of guys who've kind of been in the minors, so to speak, trying to run these major companies. And there are times where I go, I wish the best for them, but there might need to be some out of the box thinking. And I don't know if they have that. And it worries me about the business in total. But look, TV rights are going to keep wrestling on for a long, long time. I'm not worried about any company going out of business, per se. I'm just saying, in terms of a well of, you know, what was this business about, et cetera, et cetera. And look, old guys age out all the time. I get this. In every sport, in everything, new things work. But I'm looking for the innovators, because you don't get a lot of those in any sport / without a long history of, how do I put this, cycling through guys, let's put it that way.
Yeah, no, I mean, you'd love to see some just like fresh writing minds in terms of presentation. It's good. It's good to have guys like a Tommy Dreamer who understand how a match flow should go. But in terms of like overarching vision and vibe of the show, that could use a spruce up on both programs.
On all programs. Like, I mean, any wrestling program is like, because like TNA has become very WWE derivative at times. AEW is sort of derivative in its own way, even though people won't say it.
They all look very mid-2000s.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of an old presentation style. And I'm fine with wrestling always lagging a little bit behind for the sake of the video library. But in terms of pacing, in terms of the flow of the show, you know, I think that it really could use a fresh creative vision. I think that we've talked about this in the past, that would be more easily achieved for someone new coming in, if they were working with a 2-hour product or a 1-hour product versus a 3-hour product. But regardless, I think there needs to be a committee of fresh writers, people who want to write wrestling, but maybe haven't done it before and are a little bit younger and have some ideas, and veterans who know how to do a wrestling match.
Yeah.
So that the between the ropes still makes sense.
Yeah. And those young writers can't be, you know, don't necessarily have to be drooling fanboys. Like they're not writing to please. Like, the problem with McMahon is he'd have lots of young writers, but they were all writing to pop Vince type of a thing. And you kind of need guys with who can, you know, if they're going to get pushed back, they can push right back at them and know that they're not going to get fired type of a thing. The writer's room is always better when you have, you know, you have the guys who know things, you have your joke, you know, you have guys who know story, you have guys who know joke punch up, you have that guy who's just weird and just throwing stuff out there and you're like, what? And then you try and make it better and it turns out to be genius. You know, writers' rooms are just awesome if you're on a good program and you're flowing and you want to go into work every day.
They, be, they become this big flow. If you actually, you know, y'all establish.
And that's why Breaking Bad was so good, is because they had such a great writer's room in terms of people could bring in whatever. I mean, they had a bunch of playwrights in there. A lot of people hadn't done a lot of television in the past necessarily, but everybody kind of had ideas, and nobody kind of, you know, said, well, that idea sucks without first kind of trying to get it going or whatever. Like the character of Gus Fring came from, which is one of the best characters I think ever made in television, came from, oh, this guy on our show is leaving, we need a replacement, how do we do that kind of thing. It's just, yeah, a good room is a good room. I'm sorry to have interrupted you, go ahead.
No, you're not, no offense taken. All I would say is, yeah, like Star Trek Deep Space Nine, one of my favorite shows, had a very, like, they kind of had like a very, very tight writer's room. And that's how they were able to storyboard out so many of these great episodes. And also then as everyone starts getting kind of a hive mind for what is our product, then that makes the engine that is the writer's room work that much more.
Well, I'll tie it into something you said earlier. You get a lot of people like you described Nixon. They start thinking about the characters a little bit more and the world and the responsibility within this world. And then they, you know, if this is true, what else type of a thing? And there's far
more
control building type of thing in there. Once you get the flow and the hive mind and you're not scared to death that, oh, do I need to be looking for another job right now type of a thing.
Nor are you just pitching standoffy sort of like solo episodes where it's like, well, this week, you know, I'll use Star Trek again.
This week, Ross is out of milk and Rachel does something funny. Yeah, whatever.
Right. Like you're doing these, because that type of writing's unconfident. Whereas, as you were saying, you start really thinking about what are the implications of this universe. If this is true, then this is true. And fully extending off of those implications.
Yeah.
Way more interesting.
Kevin Patrick, or the former Kevin Patrick, now known as Kevin Patrick Egan, his true name, announcing today, beyond excited to announce that this year I'll be lead host of MLS 360 on Apple TV. 4 hours of live whip-around coverage, jumping from game to game, catching all the goals and big moments as they happen, all alongside three top pros and brilliant people. Good on you, brother.
Dude, I am so happy for him. He sucked at wrestling commentary, but
he was good at soccer, and that's where he came from. And
I'm so happy. I think he is a great host type. He's just not remotely a good fit for wrestling commentary in any way, shape, or form. But like, lovely guy. I don't wish any ill on him. I just, as I said at the time, and I'm not going to walk any of it back. I thought he was quite poor. At like you know, people slag on Mauro Ranallo, but like Mauro Ranallo makes Kevin Patrick, you know, or like Kevin Patrick makes Mauro Ranallo look like Vin Scully, or like, you know, something like all-time great. Yeah,
Mauro Ranallo is a great wrestling play-by-play guy. I know
people think so.
Kevin Patrick is a great host, like a panel host or something to that effect. And you know, once you find those skills or whatever, he'll be the Andrew Siciliano of MLS 360 on Apple TV, and that's good for him. And then, and we'll end with this story that, or well, not end, but in terms of the stories I have, this one's interesting to me because unbeknownst to a lot of people, when TKO took over WWE, they started cutting some costs, and there have been some senior writers and senior people in office and stuff like that who've been let go. But this week, Jennifer Pepperman, longtime writer, left of her own accord. She first joined the company in April 2017, and before making the move to WWE, she had been working as a producer and director on a number of soap operas, including shows such as One Life to Live and As the World Turns. I have some questions about certain things that I will not say here, but I'll talk to you about them off the air possibly, Chris. But from reputation, from people I've talked to, she's solid, and she made a very interesting social media move today, because this happened earlier this week, and someone, you know, it got caught in all the tabloids today for the most part, but they added at her Twitter account, which she rarely uses, and goes, hey, you know what, you know, Mercedes Moné coming into AEW should come into AEW and be her head writer. And she liked the tweet. I think if Mercedes has her own Brian Gewirtz, and I didn't ask because it's one of those things where it would be difficult for me to ask right now if Peppermint had worked on any of that golden role models stories during the pandemic, or if she had been one of the ones behind the damage control angles or whatever. But if she's been writing a lot of the women's storylines in WWE of late, and I think the main roster women's division in terms of having through lines and, you know, things like that, I think they've been solid for the most part. If AEW is going to poach somebody from WWE's writing team, this would be one of those calls I'd bring her in for an interview.
I mean, there's one thing that maybe it would give me a little bit of pause here. If you hire someone like her with her background, people might start thinking that professional wrestling is just a male soap opera.
Oh, you led me down that path and I was going with you the whole time, and then you pulled the rug. Oh, I hate you sometimes. You're really good at that because you sound like you're going to be serious for a moment and then you just F me. Good Lord. Oh, okay. Fine. We'll move on. Injuries of notes, because for some reason, everybody's taping things, which is kind of shocking to me, but nevertheless, Shotzi Blackheart is at the NXT tapings, and she injured her knee. It looks to be a very significant injury that'll take her out for a while. Jeff Hardy on Rampage, which I believe just finished showing on TNT due to the All-Star festivities, looked like he got concussed or a broken nose from Sammy Guevara in their match there. Nikita Lyons reportedly will be out once again for a significant amount of time due to an injury, and Idris Enofe got injured halfway through that Nathan Frazier Axiom tag team match on NXT last week. Any thoughts on that before we go to the Lazy River?
I didn't think what they were doing with Shotzi was particularly good, so it's probably not a bad thing that they're, you know.
No, but she's the perfect person to send down to NXT occasionally as that, oh, look, a main roster person has come down here to fight somebody and do some things.
You're actually right. She really is, because she can come down and have like a special gimmick match and then move on, and it's no harm.
She can do a hardcore match, or whatever. Nikita Lyons is interesting. I've heard it's either a knee or a hip. It kind of brings the question. I mean, there's a lot of knee and hip injuries in that NXT women's division, and I think it's because the training right now, I mean, I'm not going to say, well, it's because they don't have any full-time female trainers. I don't know that for a fact, but they're doing the tumbling gymnastics thing.
It's the style of
it's the style of women's wrestling that they're doing right now.
Yeah, no, right now it's all cartwheels and it's yes. flips and cartwheels and, like, you know,
gymnastics. PAs. It's gymnastics,
right? Like, and so yeah, no, these women are probably hurting themselves because they're doing
and someone
all
like
this
Nikita,
acrobatics.
Yeah, and someone like Nikita, yeah. who is a bigger woman. Putting a lot of strain on
the knees.
Being
told to do like yes. spin kicks, like jump spin kicks, yes. which granted at her both height and size are impressive looking. Is that really, I mean,
it's not something you want to do every day in practice. Let's
they're not something way. You want to do every day in practice. They honestly would get a lot more mileage if they came out every once in a while. Like if she only did that in a big match and that was a big spot where she took someone down, that would be huge. I really think I think all the, because you saw this with Maxine Dupri too, the cartwheely crap. Her match was just trash on Raw. But that's because they make her do like handspring, elbow, twirl, a jumping jack, ha. And I think before, yeah, ha. I mean, like, before we even get to that, Like, let's get arm drags down. Let's get, you know, quality suplexes. I'd much rather see the women delivering some stiff looking suplexes than car.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
I would, yeah, I'd much rather they be punch kick, you know, 1985 wrestlers, just because that would be a style that would suit them. And then you could do like a couple of them as like the Rock and Roll Express, you know, the acrobatic types, and they'd look more impressive type of a thing. But instead, we have everybody trying to work like a 2005 ROH indie wrestler. And I don't think the athleticism is quite there yet necessarily to do the wear and tear on it. And also just make it look real. I mean, that's all I want out of a wrestling match. Instead of doing cartwheels and flips and I'm going to do a twirl before I throw this punch. No, just throw the punch. That's
my other problem is even if they're doing topes to the outside, they still would be having a very soft looking match style.
Yes.
Which is ironic because, yeah, it's physical as we've just been discussing. But you can have a physical match in the sense of, like, it is physically demanding to do all these cartwheels and handsprings and backflips, and it still looks soft as heck.
Yeah, it's the old guy complaint. I'm an old guy, I'll take it. Of are you looking like you're trying to win the match, or are you looking like you're trying to put on a dance show? And it's like, I just want them to try and win the match. That's all. Unless your gimmick is you're showy and stuff, and then you can do all that stuff. Yeah, it's
right, and then that stuff actually should backfire on you.
Yes.
The Dazzler elbow and stuff should be more of a heel thing, and we should be kind of rooting for them to fail when they do their crazy or super ornate handspring elbow or whatever it is.
And with that, we'll go to the lazy river of wrestling criticism. Whatever we watch, whatever's on our mind, we'll talk about it here. For once, I have a New Japan note, which is very odd because I watched some New Japan last night. Chris, I'm going to let you start because a lot of my stuff is just going to be complaining, and it's not, oh, this was horrible. It's just confusion on things that they're doing in promos and things of that nature. Cause the wrestling's been good. We talked about this pre-show, but it hasn't been exciting. It hasn't been heat filled. It hasn't been, you know, there's no like menace to it. It's been good wrestling. And that's true for WWE and AEW. And then NXT was just the drizzling craps this week. But if you have a positive, please start with it. Cause I want to start on a positive.
Oh man, that you're making it tough just because like, dude, basically like, and you mentioned NXT and that's kind of where I was going to start. Just like, this was a horrible show with I'll start with the only bright spot on the show right now, which is I think Baron Corbin,
yes,
and Braun Breaker,
yes,
continue to find really good chemistry with one another. They like, they just have really good asshole jock energy.
Oh, they're good. They're such a good
they're
Hoss
good.
Team.
They're
gym
good
class
team.
Bullies. They're what the Creed should have been if they had stayed down there and been heels, really, is what they are. No, I really like them a lot. The only thing I can think of from NXT that's just, it's that Roxanne Perez, Maddie Rynkowski, or Ren Sinclair bit in the locker room. These women in the locker room segments have to stop.
Oh, they're so bad.
They're horrible.
They're
all women, I mean, hate each other out of the book of Jerry Lawler type of thing. And they're just dreadful. And God bless her. This characterization of Roxanne Perez, we still haven't gotten the full on heel turn, and it's a journey, and it's a journey nobody wants to be on because she can't adequately. The lisp is taking me out of her hatred. Let's put it that way.
I mean, and I guess since we're doing it and we're on this subject, like we discussed this a bit before the show. So I'll give the abbreviated version of this right now. Adriana Rizzo is a dreadful, dreadful character who is not compelling in any way, shape, or form as a babyface. The only way I could really see, I hate this we only know one accent mafioso crap that they have been doing with the family, but it might work if they were all heels and Adriana Rizzo's character was in like notably good at pulling strings and manipulating people. And like you did entire episodes of NXT around the notion that Rizzo knows how to manipulate both the men's locker room and the women's locker room. And like, basically she plays the entire locker room like a fiddle for one episode.
Like she's not even cast against type in any way. She's a gun moll for the most part. You know, she's not they've now found the mafia attorney through what's that?
Yeah.
Dude?
Right. No, that Luca's whatever
Crescio
his name
or something
is.
Like that. Yeah, I know what that is. I mean, like if she was
Crucifino, yeah,
who I like, and he's decent in his role. But like, yeah. If she was the one who came in as the hitman, if she was the heavy of the mafia, it's like, oh, we have a job we need to do. Who are we gonna if that was her and she was a badass and she was great, then this thing would be a lot more interesting. But instead,
oh my god, different debut. Imagine if you have Lorenzo and D'Angelo having a meeting. This is before we even know Rizzo. And D'Angelo goes, you're in over your head, Lorenzo. I'm going to call Rizzo. And if for 3 weeks, we see the impact of Rizzo, but we never see Rizzo. So we think Rizzo's a dude.
Yeah.
Like, and a big dude. And like other people think Rizzo's a big dude. And then all of a sudden, we see Adriana Rizzo. This also allows you, in getting her over, to do things that like you couldn't necessarily put on TV, like her like taking a steel chair to a dude's head or something like that. You just show the aftermath of all that and establish that she's like this badass. But instead, she's like, hey, what's going on, boys? How y'all doing? I'm also with you twos.
I want the meatball.
It's
who
just
made the gravy for Sunday dinner? You know,
no, she's like the scrappy do of this team right now. And I think that there's a way to make it work. This isn't working at all. I could keep going on the family. Like, the family has a gimmick.
Well, basically, there are more interesting things to talk about than this NXT.
Fair
there's
enough.
No more NXT talk.
Okay.
I'm going to go to AEW Dynamite because there are some things that have been that were bugging me. Like, I like, don't get me wrong, I liked the Dax. John Moxley match.
Yeah,
I liked it. I didn't love
it. Yeah, I didn't love it. I liked it.
It never increased intensity or anything like that. But while I'm on this match, the Blackpool Combat Club, can we get consistency from 1 week to the next on what these guys' motivation is and what they're doing? Because from what I remember, Moxley said, and Danielson are both, hey, if you want us to respect you, yeah, get in here and fight us and bleed with us. All right. Dax gets in the ring there, bleeds with them, and then Moxley, who is getting babyface cheers until he comes out and throws up the double deuce to people, is holding on to the choke too long. Claudio's obviously the heel. Danielson's kind of a babyface still. And don't give me this it's shades of gray stuff and you have this kind of thing in groups and things like that.
Have no coherent rule.
Last week,
if they had a rule.
Last week, they were the defenders of AEW from CMLL Invaders. So they were pure on baby faces last week. This week, they're heels. Yeah, it's one of those, it's starting to drive me a little bit nuts because it feels like it's lazy. It feels like, well, we're just going to do whatever we want this week with them.
Yeah, and like in a way, you're kind of like letting them drive the car too, where it's like, well, Moxley and Claudio got their own ideas of what they want to do this week, so we're doing that.
Yeah.
I hate it. They need to, they can be a bounty hunter, true neutral, gray, Boba Fett-y sort of faction.
Yes.
If they have a standard rule. Like, if you actually fight hard and bleed with us, babyface or heel, and you fight hard and you bleed with us, we will give you grudging respect. I thought that the assault on FTR in particular was just so wildly out of character with them Even if they have had matches in the past or whatever, it was so far afield from like what Blackpool Combat Club was supposed to be about in terms of like their values and ethics and, you know, that sort of stuff.
Instead, they're Stone Cold Blackpool Combat Club. You know, they're just like, oh, we're going to hit the stunner on either baby faces or heels, no matter who it is after the match. You know, but even then you could build that ethos. Like, we're just going to beat people up and we're going to enjoy it, and we're just going to be full on heels. And we'll sometimes beat up heels too. But they need an ethos, or they need a mission statement or something. Your turn, sir.
Yeah. No, it's the lack of the ethos that bothers me. I continue to be, speaking of inconsistent writing or flummoxing writing, the Adam Page and Swerve Strickland thing.
Thank you.
Continues to be flummoxing. On one hand, the Adam Page line of "Don't write that I was angry. I wasn't angry." Had me cack. So good.
Drill?
So good. Yeah, drill. Yeah. Like I have.
Don't write that in the newspaper that I was angry. I was not angry.
Yeah, it's so good. So good.
It's a reference that I actually had to look up, because I go, that sounds like a drill tweet.
It is. That was really funny. But beyond that. Right. Is Swerve really a good or compelling or interesting babyface right now, or just a guy with a tagline?
Let me back you off right there, because I have a rant in me about this.
Go for it.
Number one, Samoa Joe, awesome. Samoa Joe was the best damn thing about this entire promo segment. Comes in, gives a promo, gets tired of these two whiny bitches, and says, I'm just going to kick both your butts, and then leaves. Phenomenal. He's my favorite guy on AEW right now.
What did he say at the end? Because I remember that being very funny.
It was something like, you think you're going to pin, I'll pin you, or you're going to pin him, or you're going to pin him. Screw it. I'm going to kick your both your asses. And he left.
Yeah. I was trying to remember, like, what is he's great. He is an absolute bright spot on the show, though he has heavy transitional champion energy. He's like such a good champion.
And Paige, for as much grief as we've given him over the weeks, he's playing heel here, and he was very good. The problem here, and you've picked it out, is Swerve playing babyface when he's been a heel this entire time, even though the crowd's trying to turn him and he's getting cheers. And the problem with this one is this promo took away everything we liked about Swerve as the badass, the mastermind, the guy who decided to go to Nick Wayne's house and make him bloody and stuff like that. The evil guy who'd grin, you know, with the grill and everything like that. Instead, he's looking at Joe and going, well, if you see my resume, I've worked very hard and won a lot of matches. I'd really, really like a chance to have your match. And you're like, what is he doing here? Be the baddest dog in the yard, Swerve, like you've been on this entire time. Just go, Joe, wasn't personal before, but I would kick your ass for the title. Boom, now I'm interested.
Why? Don't bring out Nana. Don't bring out Nana.
Yeah,
Nana,
don't bring out the dancing clown, you know? It's like, yeah, just hold him back for a while. And you know, he's dancing in the aisle. Everybody can do the dance for the crowd. He did this before for the matches, and then you just give him the arm. Say, stay back, I'm going to handle this. And then he lost every bit of menace he ever had by doing this. You know, I've been doing this for a long time, and this was the origin story that nobody wanted. I've been a pesky veteran for 14 years, up and down the roads, trying to get my chance for the world title. No, just be the badass you were when it's Swerve's house. You were exactly right. This was a tagline promo. He was cutting a babyface promo to get to whose house?
Yes. And all of the other in between. Yeah, that's where he needed to get back to, is his safety point.
Yes.
Right? All the other in between stuff was pretty weak. Because straight up, I think this match actually works the best with both, as weird as it might sound, both Paige and Strickland effectively as heels, and Joe is the effective babyface. Not necessarily stating it that outright, but don't try to turn Swerve into this good guy instead commit to the notion.
Yes, it's the,
this guy's a prick.
Yes.
Who will do anything to get the title, up to and including break into Adam Page's house.
And talking to his child, yes.
And talking to his child. And that, while that would initially have been sympathetic for us, the viewers, for Adam Page, Adam Page's reaction to it is something we're not sympathetic to. And so that also makes him a heel. And have these guys both, I mean, because neither one of them are going to win the title here, right? So have some confidence in your story here. Give a good reason up front why neither one of them should. Swerve shouldn't win it because he's been trying to do this shit the wrong way.
Yes.
That. Yeah. Okay. Right now, he's like, I have a dream. Blah 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 blah. But like, while he's been pursuing that dream, he's been willing to stab everybody in the neck, and karma should finally come for him. Meanwhile, Adam Page also should not be champion, and you tell that story too. That this guy, yeah, he was champion, but he didn't have his head straight right now. He's completely lost the thread, and that he's unfocused. That he doesn't know who he is. He's having an identity crisis. And Samoa Joe should be, for both of these men, the moment of realization that they're not that guy right now. And Samoa Joe should put them on both handily. But to have confidence, and he probably will end up winning this match. But it'd be dumber to belt Swerve.
This is the moment in both heroes' journey where they fail.
Yeah.
And they have
and
to
they
go.
Should fail.
And they should fail. They should fail. And they have to go and they have to reassess how they're doing things. And then Page is on the dark path, and yep. Swerve has kind of been on the light path. Okay,
yeah.
Fine, type of a thing. Right. And then you have the duality of that. Yes.
Yeah, Swerve has to realize that he needs to not have Nana and the Mogul Embassy. Like, essentially, this needs to be both of these guys lose to Vader moment.
Yes.
In Empire Strikes Back. And Swerve goes from the dark side to the light side, and Page breaks bad.
Yes. No, you're exactly simple, right.
It's a simple story. And it, in a way, having them both get so hung up on each other, that might have actually been a very good go-home promo, where Samoa Joe goes, I'm going to tell you why you guys are both about to lose. You're both about to lose because you're so busy looking at each other that you don't even have your eyes on the prize right now. And that's it. Like it, but that should have been right before. Like this is a story where it's fine to tell the ending up front because it's a morality play.
Yeah.
And there's a good guy and a bad guy, and we're gonna tell a moral story.
Or this is also, I mean, this is the end of the good, the bad, the ugly. This is, I mean, and Clint Eastwood wasn't necessarily good in that. He was kind of a jerk. I mean, he was using Tuco to do whatever, and then Angel Eyes is the bad guy, and then, you know, and Tuco is kind of the Weasley dude within this whole three thing. But you know, and that final shootout, they're all looking at each other going, who am I gonna shoot, who am I gonna shoot, who am I gonna shoot? And then you get the end. But yeah, your turn, sir.
Was Swerve not me?
Oh, was Swerve you? Okay, so okay, good, because I got another rant in me. Here we go.
Let's go.
Darby Allin. This promo stunk. I'm gonna say it. We just set up last week that the Young Bucks, the EVPs, came out there and beat him bloody and are wearing his blood on their suits to wrestle, which is a cool heel move. Don't get me wrong.
I like that.
I'm liking the direction the Bucks have gone. They haven't gone heavy enough into the, like, I love Taz saying he got fined on commentary for giving that terrible idea. I mean, called the EVP trigger or the EVP Bucks or whatever he gave the name for. And then almost doing the thing to Shivani would have been cool too, because I'm all for occasionally beating up an announcer for heat. But Darby comes out here, and instead of being pissed, and instead of saying, you want this title shot, whatever, I'll give it to you, whatever, he does another one of these. He goes in the office politics promo, Chris. When this company was being formed, you hired all your friends from California to be in here. All right. Some of us know that. Some of us know that they that the Bucks were hiring people from who worked in PWG with them and who were on the West Coast.
Can you imagine saying this shit to somebody who's literally wearing your blood on their suit?
Yes.
Like
exactly.
I walk into a room and I look at these two guys who beat me to smithereens and are wearing my blood.
They hit me
on
with a
their
bat.
Clothing.
They hit me with a baseball bat.
And they're
in the
using
head.
It as a totem, and I'm staring at my own blood. And then I go, well, what you need to remember, Philip and Paul, is that when America was first founded in 1776, like gonna give them a history lesson, you friggin' nerd.
Yeah, and it's like, oh, but there was one vice president who believed in me. Guess who that vice president was, Chris?
Cody
it
Rhodes.
It was Cody Rhodes, and they shot Cody chant in the middle of an AEW show. What are we doing? It's just such a... All you need to do... Stop with the backstage meta crap.
You know why they do it, though, Jeff? You know why they do it?
They do it to piss me off. And
no, that's part. Right. Here's the real reason they do it. They think they do it to trigger us, right? The reason they really do it is because they don't have a really good universe to fall back on.
Yeah.
So in absence of good writing, they appeal to the dirt sheets.
Clever is the enemy of good. And they're it's just clever. And it's like
it's their clever way of avoiding good writing.
Yeah, I just and they've been hiring people to help with the writing, which is who is not I tend to think people are being left to their own devices for the creative and nobody wants to say no. But we need to say no to some of these ideas. Darby should not be giving a crap about who has the bigger corner office on the 33rd floor of AEW Enterprises, Inc. He should be wanting
Darby
to kill these people.
He should have shown up with the contract in his pocket, ambushed the Young Bucks, bloodied them, and signed the contract in their blood.
Yes.
That is the appropriate reaction for what was done to him and what they want. They want a title match so bad, he's going to sign it in their blood.
Yeah, and for the part of the match, the Young Bucks versus Top Flight, they gotta, if you're going to do that kind of match, you need, because Top Flight's like number three in their rankings or whatever, and this is to establish that the Bucks have now beaten a top five team and they can get in their thing. Top Flight should have had a lot more close calls in that, and I mean super close calls, to the point where the Bucks don't know, have any idea what's going on. Then you give the nut shot and then you walk over, because that's heat right there. They just kick them in the balls after getting absolutely murder death by Top Flight, instead of just, oh, here's a dive, here's this. No, Top Flight should have ran them out of this building almost, to the point where we have to kick them in the nuts now, and now we're going to win, and now we're going to call ourselves number one contenders. That's the heat right there, kids. We're having a good match with them, and then we cheat to win, and we've cheated these fans out of a four-star special. No, just have Top Flight almost think, because nobody ever thought Top Flight was going to win. You have to convince people that Top Flight might have won this match, and then, oh no, what are the Bucks going to do type of a thing. And I don't think they went heavy enough into that.
Yeah, no, I know that. That's another mistake on that, right? I liked the moment where Matt Jackson goes, "Oh man, these guys are good."
Yeah,
it was a great like in ring piece of dialogue business at the wrong time and for the wrong story. I actually thought he did a really great job with that, though. So look, I'm throwing some flowers at Matt Jackson. Look at me. It's new year, Jeff. New year, new no.
Oh, no. I threw some blood. I mean, I love the blood on the suit thing, and they haven't changed their suits yet. I thought that was a strong.
No, I agree. I agree. Like, they're doing
that's
some
just
good
a
character work.
Jerk move, and I approve of it.
But I would have had especially if you are ultimately going to end this story with Matt and Nick beating Sting and Darby. And getting the belts off of them, because I guess maybe Sting and Darby retire as champions or whatever. But like, I would have had Top Flight taking 90% of this match,
yes,
and the tables only turning when Nick finally cheats.
That's what I was saying. That's what I just said.
Yeah, 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 right. Like, you know, that I agree.
Okay,
I
good. Agree. Yeah. It's your turn, sir.
You know, let's go to the main event here. Orange Cassidy versus Matt Taven. If you had to describe to me Matt Taven's character in, I'm gonna ask for three sentences. Explain to me in like, give me three, you know, like not Matt is human. He is bad.
No, I can give you this.
Yeah. Okay. Give me Matt Taven.
Tag team partner of Mike Bennett, apparently a former ROH world champion guy who held the giraffe. How's that?
That's kind of what I got too. So like he has no real personality.
No.
So you put this guy into a main event that is a foregone conclusion main event, no less, where also we firmly and reasonably and get outside interference. We expect it. We get it. I don't understand why Matt Taven was tapped for a main event match, other than the fact that Orange Cassidy is having a match against Roddy Strong. That does not give anywhere near enough of a reason to have Matt Taven have a main event match with Orange Cassidy.
It was
let alone
to, it was
a
close,
hardcore.
It was due to the attack on Chuck E. T. last week.
I know, but I mean,
I'm with you. I'm with you on
raise the stakes on the match against Roddy.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, don't do this. This gives Orange Cassidy stupid baby face syndrome. He is doing a plunder match weeks before a title match.
But you know what all this was, don't you? This was all just smoke and mirrors to getting to another inch of Trent being closer to a heel turn.
I mean, there's that. But it's the stupid baby face syndrome of Trent. Yeah, of Trent, yeah, Trent turned
came out with a pipe and just got bodied. I laughed my ass off at that.
But like, why would Orange Cassidy be so stupid as to accept a stipulation that's no disqualification?
Yes,
knowing full well that he's going up against a heel faction stable with one ally potentially. Like if you're gonna do that, you have your insurance policies. It should have been. Well, what's his name and a bunch of other people.
I'll
too.
Push back a little on that because the insurance policies were, oh look, there's the box of chocolates from Chuck E. T. You know, with the thumbtacks in it. That was the way they kind of went. Oh yeah, that's how they got around that. It's not a smart way to do it, but they did it.
No, I mean, but you need human being insurance policies for human
beings.
Where
was Wardlow during this thing where he could just
right
kill them?
Right. No, this was a dumb match because you have to move a lot of pieces around to even make this match not make Orange Cassidy look stupid. And then after you move all those pieces around, what are we treated to? A match between Orange Cassidy and Matt Taven that nobody wanted. So like, I don't think that this was it should have just been a no stipulation, basic singles match wherein Orange Cassidy prevails over Matt Taven. And then we have the interstitial at the end. I thought this was a very silly usage of the main event slot on this episode of Dynamite.
I watched a silly match last night. I watched from New Beginning in Osaka. I watched this, what was basically New Japan's version of a War Games match between United Empire and the War Dogs. I will say this on the positive side. It was a interesting and brave experiment to do this kind of match in New Japan. Now, what they do is they only have one ring. They have the cage is not up on the apron. The cage is like around ringside, it's about 8 foot tall. It's about the same size as the top of the ring, but it's like you have the mats around the ring, and then you have the cage on the outside of that. Right, it looks like an octagon almost, you know, for UFC type of thing, but with a wrestling ring in it. you don't have a door on the cage. It's just kind of open air. People can walk into it. Still, they got to the same rules of the War Games. You know, 5 minutes start, but they got to that because it was originally going to be 2 minutes for each person. And but it's like, no, I want you for 10 minutes. No, no, I'll give you five. Okay, great. Okay, so we get to that part of the War Games. And it's it, and then it becomes a plunder indie match where guys bringing in weapons down there and stuff like that. It was interesting, but you can't do this kind of bloodthirsty, maniacal type of match. And they worked it. I mean, it was a little indie-rific, but there were things that were Southern style in there where it looked like they were trying to fight and have a fight inside of it. It was kind of cool. But this Japanese audience is so quiet and polite. There's no heat to it. And it's so quiet while you're doing this. You know, when you watch those first War Games, you know, those first four or five War Games, this crowd is, are the Romans, you know, looking for the blood of the Christians in the Colosseum. You know, they're screaming for absolute death. The heat is on a level. In Japan, it's, oh, like a clap or something. And you're just like, we can't have these types of matches in an actual Japanese style of
thing.
Yeah,
the cadence of the audience simply doesn't work for
no.
it. That audience is actually really awesome for main event style matches.
Yes.
I think like those type of audiences are really awesome for it. Cause when they build to a crescendo, like I remember like, you know, the Okada Tanahashi matches were like, when they finally build to a crescendo for Okada and it's like, Okada, Okada, like even the back punch, having the emphasis on the last syllable there. Just, I mean, it's a different energy and I think it really lends to main event. But plunder matches are all about, this is going to go off. They're fireworks shows.
You actually know
so
where
you
it
need
would
the
work.
Oohs and ahs.
It would work it in all Japan. Like maybe even all Japan early 90s type of style where you had Brody and Hanson and guys swinging chains around and Abdul the Butcher would come in and, you know, all those other guys. But yeah, the difference between an All Japan hoss fight crowd and a New Japan, very quiet, very, you know, serene type of thing. Yeah, I think it's just a location thing. It was a noble, brave experiment, I thought. I still want a War Games with a roof on the cage again. I think the claustrophobia adds to it, even though you can't do as many aerial stupid moves. I mean, it'll look like a real fight, but watch that. I mean, it's worth your time to seek out especially if you like New Japan. It's as gory a fight you'll see in New Japan as you'll see, you know, in the last 5 or 6 years, in my opinion. But so I watched that. Do you have anything else?
In terms of the shows here,
I've said nothing about Raw or SmackDown. If you want to,
I know. I watched SmackDown, but that was like on Friday, and then I had to shovel snow for like.
And we're waiting
six
for
hours.
SmackDown to come on now, so we only have Raw, and all we had was Seth going, "I'll be your shield." Yeah. All right. Fine.
I mean, I continue to.
True.
I continue to not enjoy the Rock, Cody, Seth, Roman, like they. It's. Particularly Seth's part in it is so bad.
Yes.
But, yeah, Raw, it feels like, I mean, we're very much just on the holding pattern to Elimination Chamber here. And that's not terrible. I mean, it's not even terrible to have Drew McIntyre as, like, the fait accompli of the guy who's going to win the Elimination Chamber. But the actual show this week was really nothing to write home about. Imperium... And Jey Uso and the New Day, entertaining,
fun
match. Like they're good. They're an entertaining group. All six of them. But
it's just one of those things where you kind of want to see Imperium take that next step to being, you know, a main event heel group as opposed to Gunther with two red shirts, and you never get that. And I've wanted that ever since they were in NXT. You know,
there's just like it's weird. There's like no place for him to go. It feels like it really. I know they've got Drew. They've got Drew and Seth for Mania. But to me, the much more interesting thing would be title versus title, Intercontinental title versus world title at WrestleMania between Gunther and Seth.
Yeah, I agree. I do, but we gotta get Drew on the upper part of the card there,
and he's doing great work. Like, yes. To be clear, Drew,
we both
thumbs
love
up.
Him. We both think
big
he's
thumbs
amazing.
Up for Drew. Yeah. Drew, the bee's knees. But if you're asking me what I think would kind of maybe do more business, like in terms of what would help set up Gunther for next year here and kind of help him move to the next level, especially if you're taking the belt off of Roman and putting it on Cody, you need that new top heel. Gunther beating Seth at Mania as Cody beats Roman at Mania is a really good setup for that 2025.
You want to hear something cringeworthy? Let me find Dwayne's tweet here, because it's just, this is what we're going to get tonight on SmackDown. Where is it? Breaking WWE social records, having fun, just getting started. I'll slap your punk ass 10 more times for the culture, and you'll do nothing and like it. Tune in tonight on SmackDown.
Oh my God!
It's a hello, fellow kids, with Steve Buscemi.
No. You using for the culture there in that context, it's like a total non sequitur. It's a hilarious deployment of that there. Like yes, he doesn't actually know what he doesn't really know what for the culture means. I don't feel like.
I'm gonna get in trouble if I go deeper.
I cannot imagine that he thinks that Cody Rhodes needs to be slapped for the
for
culture.
Black History Month.
For Black History.
Do you know that Cody's married to a black woman and is half Cuban? Because he said that in a promo once. he cured racism. What are you gonna do to him?
There's just any number of. Well,
it's so cringe. Just...
Dwayne Johnson is certainly back in wrestling, people.
Yes. And we'll end it there. This has been Shake Them Ropes. You can follow me at CrapGame13 on Elon Musk's X/Twitter. You can follow Chris at DOCTOR_NOV on Instagram. Just follow the show. I update that account at Shake Them Ropes on the aforementioned X when shows come out. We are part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network, podcasting for all your, wrestling needs, fandoms, obsessions, etc. 5-star match game, Good Bad the Hungy, the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, and of course the flagship with Joe and Rich. I do a show called The Dynamite Show about 20 minutes after Dynamite is coming off the air on the Fight Game Media Network. I believe it's youtube.com/fightgamemedia. We go live there, drops into your podcatchers the next morning. Myself and Paul Fontaine do a thorough deconstruction of that night's Dynamite. A lot of the notes of which I bring onto this show, but I'd appreciate you watching. Chris has a lot of other things, including cat wrangling and guitar lessons. He's going to tell you about now.
Yeah. Follow me on Instagram if you want to see my adventures on top of Sandia Peak. If you want guitar lessons, message me on Instagram. You can occasionally see pictures of my cats, food I cook, things I write in strangers' notebooks. All sorts of exciting things can be found on Instagram.
Strangers notebooks?
This guy who's like, I guess, traveling across the country or whatever, like, came up to me yesterday while I was doing bookkeeping stuff at differential and having hot chocolate, and he was like, hey, will you write something in my travel log? And I was like, yes. And so I wrote something in his travel log, and I took a picture of it and posted it.
We'll see you next week.
Hi, I'm Case Lowe, co-host of the Open the Voice Gate podcast. The one question I'm constantly asked when it comes to Dragon Gate is, how do I get into the promotion? Well, stop asking and start listening to the Open the Voice Gate podcast, released every Wednesday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. For exclusive news and show reviews, look no further than the leader in Dragon Gate coverage, Open the Voice Gate.